Thank you, Asim, and good morning. Welcome to this presentation, this symposium. It's great to have you all here, especially Monday morning. So my topic is focused on both on big data and small data, and specifically I'm going to a little bit deviate from previous speakers, trying to come up with the idea how much data we need, because a lot of time we have limited resources, we have limited time, staff, so how much data is enough? My examples are going to be on so-called on-farm research. Now, how many of you are doing some kind of on-farm research, like street trials? Okay, thank you. So you probably know the complexity and benefits of this type of activity. But the example is, let's assume you're a crop consultant or maybe a practitioner soil scientist, and you have a client. It could be a farmer. It could be an industry representative or fertilizer dealer. They want you to test one of the soil amendments. Assume it's a quick lime. So you know that your soil is acidic and you have to improve your soil and apply lime. And you have this product to test with your farmers, your clients. Of course, from farmers' perspective, farmers wants to know, should we apply this amendment? How is it effective? Does it increase pH? How quickly? How long does it last? And what's economical benefit? For you, as a kind of project manager, because you're going to go out and apply these strips and collect soil samples, you want to know how much data to collect. Specifically, you want to know how many locations, how many replications, and also how many cores you have to pull out, which is fun. So first of all, to get these ideas, you have to know what's the difference in pH or yield you want to detect. The second, you want to know, is your budget okay? Can you fall in your allocated budget? Because anyway, all budget is limited. And finally, you want to know how much noise you will produce in your experiments, because the noise is used to estimate what's the detection limit or how much data you have to do. As a scientist or a practitioner, you have to develop so-called research hypothesis. And usually, this research hypothesis is expressed in two contrasting hypotheses. So in my case, with soil amendment or quicklime, the research hypothesis is, does this product increase soil pH? What's the difference between soil pH between control and treated strips? For the null hypothesis, you would say, well, there is no difference, or difference is zero, there is no effect. And for the alternative hypothesis, there is some effect. Of course, it's not so simple as you think, because the next step, you have to develop so-called two-by-two decision matrix. So here you have what truly happened, and here what's your decision to do. Of course, you want to always make your decisions what really happens on the field. So if it's no effect, you're correct. If there is the fact, you're correct. But a lot of time, definitely, we make mistake for different reasons. And as you know, that the type one error, what's called false positive, when in fact you detect the effect, but it's not true effect, it's called type one error. It's usually controlled by so-called alpha level or significant level. Of course, it's one part of the equation. Another type of error, it's called false negatives. The false negatives when in fact, there is effect, but you claim there is no effect. But usually, the significance level or type 1 error is controlled by so-called alpha. And in many scientific literature papers, it's 5%. Why? No one knows exactly, but that's what people use. But actually, in the statistical community where I'm very active, there are a lot of discussion about all these from different perspectives. And probably you've heard this discussion. So this is the cover of one of the book published last year by one of the retired professor from Michigan. Essentially, this fellow, let's assume he is an agronomist, and he is proposing to the lady, and she's a true scientist, saying, well, I failed to reject the null hypothesis. So he is really confused. What the heck it means? Definitely she said no, right? But the problem is definitely there is a triple negative and so on, but the philosophical challenge here, that a lot of time we as a scientist, we focus on the p-value, which is conditioned on the null hypothesis, meaning that the difference is zero. Of course, in reality, difference is never zero mathematically. And that's why it's important to look at another important fact, which for me, as I work with farmers consultant, farmers often ask how often I can detect a fact when it's real, and it's called power. I believe you probably had this in some of your stat classes, but power, it tells you the likelihood, the probability that if its effect is real, how often you'll detect this effect. And usually, it's estimated by 1 minus the false negatives, and usually, the power is about 80%. The key here is that if you have underpowered experiment, you waste your money. If you have overpowered experiment, you also waste your money because you collected more data than you need. So by using this power concept, a couple years ago, we conducted these trials with Spreakline. And one of the farmers, this is from Iowa, conducted by Iowa Soybean Association Network. We do a lot of on-farm agronomic and environmental study. So this is the quick line trial. We have line treatments here, brown, blue control. Also, we went, or someone went and collected this subsample from each strip, three subsample. So the farmer saw some benefit of the line. But the question was, he wanted to do it next year. The question was, how many replications or location we need to do for the next year to detect this effect. And that's where we actually everything started. So we used some of this data from his field, and we could estimate this power analysis. Essentially, we looked how often you can different effects, 0.1% increased pH, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and then you estimated this power to, and you can see if you want to detect 0.1, you probably need to have about 50 replication. Of course, there is not much room in any Iowa field to have 50 replication because the spreader is too wide. And if you want to detect about maybe 0.4% increase in pH, you probably need to have maybe 10, 12 replication. That's what the example of this power analysis. Of course, it's useful for one location, so it gives us some idea how much data you can collect in the future. The same we can do with subsample, and that's very important for you as a crop consultant or soil scientist because you will go and collect the subsample. So again, if you want to detect about 0.4, you probably need to sample maybe about 12 samples from each strip, which is a large number of samples. But definitely that's one of the part. So it's focused on so-called, the assumption here that so-called 5-to-80 principle. Your type 1 error or false positive 5% control, type 2 error 20% control, which assume that type 1 error is about 4 times is more risky than type 2 error. If you think about this problem, what's the bad stuff about lime? Yeah, you apply lime, it doesn't change soil, but I don't think it's relevant to this situation. But in many sciences like medicine, definitely the false negatives are very important because it can produce some negative effects. Of course, again, it's not the whole picture because often we scientists, we use about 5% significant level. As a practitioner, we use 10% level. Well, what's the difference? And usually the difference is not big if you have want to detect the large amount of the big increase in soil pH. Of course, if you want to detect the small increase, definitely the difference is big. But you also know that your client told you that you have $1,200 per each trial. So how can you fit this budget in your estimate? How much data you have to collect? So, and then if your client wants to do three or four rates, now you have to plug your prices. You have to know how much money you can spend per each acre for line plus application. And then you can develop so-called the cost function. We can know how much money we have to plug in each of these rates and fit in this budget. Of course, it's not simple question because you have to do some math and you have to decide what kind of comparison we have to do. In this case, for this example, we want to compare each of these lime rate with the control. So rate 1 control, 2 control, and rate 3 control. In this case, we can apply some of the economical tools. This is called Lagrangian multiplier, which often used by economists, and you can optimize and see how much data you have to collect to fit exactly into this budget of $1,200 per trial. And here's the results. It tells me that in order to reduce the noise or reduce the variability, you have to collect 12 replication, 12 samples for control, 6 for first rate, 5 for 2, and 4. Actually, they are same, but what it means that you have to put, you have to pull more data from control because your control uses a reference for all of your data. So again, that's an example for this analysis. The problem with this type of trials, if you haven't done, there is a lot of noise because this is applied by commercial applicator. So one of the ways to control this noise, we look at the organic matter because at the same time we sample organic matter. So this is the field. This is subsamples from 1 to 18 from 3 applications. The red one, those are background, a sample before Lyme application. The dots, the open dots are untreated control. And the crosses, the blue crosses, those are quick Lyme. You can see on organic matter that both organic matter for first sampling and second sampling, pretty good match. So it should be that way. So there is no effect of pH here because the pH, because these crosses, they're not on top of the open cycles. But look at this field. This organic matter for this, for another trial, look at this. It was sampled a couple months after. But that's what often happens. US consultant, someone else goes and you come back and your data completely doesn't match. There are different reasons why the 6 inches soil analysis or soil depth is very difficult to control, but also the accuracy, GPS, and so on. So a lot of time, we have to use different layers to control this variability. And that's very important when you do this type of analysis. But actually, in that specific case, that farmer, or essentially that farmer lived right here, we had another 4 trials. And he was very excited. He wanted to use this product in the future, but we were really cautious. So in order to make better estimate, we wanted to have a larger pool of data. And then we estimated this power analysis using these 4 additional locations just located here close to this farm. It's the same design, maybe 3, 4, 5 replication of strips with the Lyme and no Lyme and control. And something when we look at these Lyme treatments, that we look at the so-called random noise variability. You can remove the effect of the Lyme, and then you can look at the contribution for random variation from your trial locations, your application, your subsample, and residual noise. So what we found that from those 4 trials in that specific region, that the random noise for a trial location was about 10%, about 4 for replication, 35 for subsample, and look at about the residual noise, about 52%. Yep, it's pretty noisy system. And that's what we usually deal to detect the difference. So again, we have to consider this noise to know how much data to collect in the future. So we estimated this, we used this pool data, these 4 trials, and estimate this power analysis for the future estimate. And what we found out that if the specific farmer wants to detect, for example, 0.3 or 0.2 difference in soil pH, he probably needs to do maybe, or we need to do, US consultant, about maybe 6-7 trials. If you want to know how many subsample, it's the same way. So essentially, you can do this type of analysis, or someone can do for you, and know and estimate how much data, how much resources you have to do in the future. Of course, it's not the whole picture. Often, which usually scientists suggest, that in addition to type 1, 2 error, you have to consider so-called type S error. A type S error is type of sign error. It's if pH increases, if Lyme increases soil pH and your pH is negative, decrease, you would make the type S error. It's an error of sign. Also, it's often suggested that it's important to consider so-called type M error, type of magnitude error. Because if you claim that the effect is big and in fact is small, definitely it's an error. In our case, for all of those 5 trials, the increase in soil pH was 0.3. So if you think about this type of experiments, that 0.3 increased pH for farmers, it's not practical. It's not practical economical because, again, it's supposed to increase pH rapidly. It depends from buffering capacity, but 0.3, it's not very practical. So in case we are making type type M error in this situation. So again, it's very important because as you get more data with a lot of observation, it's very easy to make this type M error in your situations. So my home take message for you as a practical consultant or agronomist is that whenever you use some kind of information from literature extension or industry, always look at how much data was collected. Never base your decision on many stars or p-values because it's only part of the equation, part of the problem. Also, always ask your scientist or consultant or researchers to conduct this type of power analysis. It's not rocket science, but at least it will give you some sense how much data you need to collect in the future. Also, be aware of this false negative, false positive, and type S and type M error. Because especially with big data, you can collect a lot of data, and it's easy to make this type M error in your estimations. And finally, I think the big data problem is the same as small data problem. It doesn't really matter. It's just a different scale. Because again, you can make these type of errors quite very easily with big data as well. Of course, you can ask, what are there any tools online available to do this power analysis? Yes, there are some tools. Most of these tools are focused on very simple example, like maybe two samples, like t-test, pair t-test. One of the nice tools developed in Germany, it's called G-Power. I don't know, maybe someone look at this. It's very nice. It actually has a nice visual graphics. You can plug a lot of data. Some of your examples, just play around and see. It's very nice. Unfortunately, for multi-locational situation, like you're gonna work with different fields, different years, there are no tools. It's more complex because it requires some kind of simulations. But again, you can look up at some of these, and there are some other tools online too, especially for medicine. For medical studies, there are a lot of different tools available, just the simple tools that will allow to make some estimate how much data you have to collect in the future to make these statements. So again, I present this work from Iowa, from the Iowa Association on Farm Network, where we work with both agronomic and environmental studies. Thank you for your attention.
And a quick question for Peter. Yes, please.
The question is, this power analysis is based on previous knowledge of variability. We have historical data, but you can use some of the data from literature. There are different ways to do. Of course, it's better to have more specific data from your situation, your climate, but yeah, you can do it. Very, very simple case. Yeah.
One more quick question. If it's not, thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.